Welcome to the Religious Studies Project, hosted by Christopher Cotter and myself, David Robertson. This podcast is produced in association with the British Association for the Study of Religions. You can visit our website at www.religiousstudiesproject.com. Today we're joined by Lewis Lee, who's the founder of the Non-Religion and Secularity Research Network, or NSRN for short, as we'll be referring to it throughout the interview. She's also one of the editors of the journal Secularism and Non-Religion, and has recently edited a special issue, the only special issue of the Journal of Contemporary Religion on secularism and non-religion. Or was it non-religion and secularity?
Indeed it was.
Indeed, so welcome Lewis.
Thank you.
Before we get underway, I should also say we're joined today by Ethan Quillen, who some of you will have heard before on some of our roundtables. A, because Ethan is very interested in this area, and B, because, as you hopefully know, I do some work for the NSRN as well, and we didn't want it to just seem like the NSRN interviewing itself and telling you how great it was, so thought it'd be good to get someone with some differing opinions in some respects in. So hello, Ethan.
Hello, thank you.
Hello.
Yay. Right, so what we're going to be talking about today, broadly then, is this idea of non-religion. That's fine, don't worry about the noise. What it is, why we should study it, how we should study it, etc. But before we delve into all those issues, just non-religion, go. What is it?
Non-religion, go. Well, I think we have to start by saying what non-religion is,
yes.
Because it's a deceptively simple concept. People use it very commonly, actually, in their everyday speech. But to date, as far as I'm aware, there's no entry in the Oxford English Dictionary for this term. There is one for irreligion, which is a very similar concept in the way I use it, at least. And it's used by people as a general catch-all, just meaning something other than religion. I use it in more specific terms to mean something which a practice or perspective that differs from religion, something that's defined by how it differs from religion. So it's religious-like in some way we consider meaningful, but beyond that we need to know more. And I make this distinction from between non-religion and secularity. Secularity is often used to mean something very similar. In general, this is a young field and you have a problem with slippery terminology. But my attempt to be more precise with these terms has been to suggest that secularity relates to something which is a space or object for which religion provides a secondary authority reference point. It could be very, very marginal, or not that marginal. The point is that it's a secondary reference point. Non-religion takes religion as its primary reference point.
Okay, so non-religion isn't just stuff that's not religious, right? It's not. We're not just studying everything that's not religion. We're not studying, you know, sport or politics or anything. Those aren't non-religion.
Quite, and we may want to discuss the ways in which they are similar to religion or replicate some of the functions that religion has been previously associated with and so on and so forth. And that's a really interesting discussion to have. But in terms of setting up a programme of research, in terms of these things are about understanding those phenomena, that's about understanding how football is or is it's about football. What we're talking about here are a much more specific set of practices and perspectives that haven't had a clear role. You know, football can sit in the leisure department. Where do ethics, ways of meaning making, narrative making, etc., that aren't religious but are, as I'm saying, religious-like in some way, where do they sit in the academy at the moment? So what we're trying to do is make space for them, and we use this concept of non-religion as an umbrella term to at least take a first step towards saying where this field is, what we're starting with, what's in it, rather than what it is.
I'm sort of glad you began in describing non-religion, and I don't know if we really discussed this, but in my particular research, I focus mostly on atheism, and I'm glad that Chris brought up the idea of non-religion being something that is non-religion, such as sport or things such as that different from religion, that still have a sort of importance in people's lives beyond what might just be a hobby, and that there's a difference between what is non-religion and, as you described, non-religion as being sort of identifying itself as opposite of a religion. In that sense, would you mind sort of just going a little bit more why you would be against using a term such as atheism as sort of an umbrella term in that same way?
I'm glad you put it that way, because I think it's important to clarify that I definitely don't think of non-religion as opposite to religion in any way. What it's about is saying that lots of categories we work with are part of some universal field. So if we're talking about gender, everyone has a gender. If we're talking about hobbies or leisure time, we conceive of everyone, that being something that we can understand in relation to all humans. The difference with religion is that it's an exclusive concept. So if we're talking about religion, there are people we're excluding from that discussion. So I don't see it as oppositional. I see it as a way of saying, of very much highlighting that religion is an exclusive term, and it would be much more interesting to understand religion in inclusive terms. How we do that is a big and open question. I think one of the biggest questions facing religious studies scholars and non-religious studies scholars today. But the concept of non-religion is about fleshing out the field, completing the field, as it were, rather than an opposition. As to atheism, I think atheism is a fascinating topic, and it does in practice play a very large role in non-religion studies. The reason I don't lead with it is precisely the same reason that I'm not talking to you now in a theist studies department. That we're working with a lineage of concepts here, and that constrains what we're doing, but also enables us to speak about something. If the history of religions had been different, we might be talking about non-spirituality or something like that. I definitely don't think we'd be talking about spirituality in inclusive terms, because the populations I work with in my research, with non-religious people, have many concerns with the concept of spirituality. But we might have the possibility of non-spirituality studies had the history of these things been different. We might have had non-theist studies or atheist studies, whichever you prefer. We're picking out a concept to lead with, and I do think theism might be a useful umbrella term, because I think there's a very strong link between theism and religion. On the other hand, that's my personal view, and lots of scholars, the great strength of the term religion has been that it's very vague. And that means that we can debate what is religious while still having an institutional setting to do it within, to set the boundaries that are necessary in order to have the conversation, provide the structures to hang it off. And so non-religion benefits from the strengths of religion as a vague and inclusive term. Atheism, I think, is one of several aspects that might be included in the non-religious area, but I don't see it as non-religion as a container within which atheism belongs, for the reason that there are lots of people who participate in religious ceremonies, who have some kinds of religious beliefs associated with some religious institutions, but are atheists themselves. And I think atheist studies is an independent field that overlaps very extensively with non-religion studies. What do you reckon? You convinced?
I think also part of this argument is, as we were sort of discussing before we started recording, the difference between a social scientific study of religion and religious studies. And I think part of some of the issues in using umbrella terms such as non-religion that I might see is because I'm coming from a religious studies background and would prefer using a term such as atheism as sort of an alterity term to theism in a Western connotation. Mm. And the use of non-religion as being a little dangerous, because in saying something is non-religious, we essentially have to define then what is religious. And so it then becomes vague, which you touched on as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're absolved from that problem if you're working with atheism.
No, yeah, I agree.
Especially at the moment where there's some really interesting definitions of theism out there. There's the sort of more standard forms, but cognitive science, which I think is a hotbed of new ideas. Often its kind of master narratives are not so appealing, but it has lots of interesting ideas, and some of them are how it's understanding components of theism as it would see it. Linda Woodhead, who I think has contributed to this series, I think she has an excellent definition of a very social scientific definition of what theism might mean. So in the end, I think we're always going to have to do that. But you are pushing towards what's been a major controversy, which is that all of these terms take religion as their starting point or theism as their starting point. And especially people who are non-religious or atheist sometimes object to that. They want to say, my life exists outside of this religious framework and these religious discourses and these theistic discourses and so on. And some people have proposed that secularity is much better in that regard. It sounds much more neutral. I think partly what I've already said about this discussion emerging out of a discourse that's in which religion's played a role is part of the story here, and that's just a practical, pragmatic stance to take. But what I definitely would say is that non-religion is a working terminology, and if it's still around in 10 years, then this area of research hasn't fulfilled the promise that I think it has. I don't like secularity because I think it's a really useful concept that works in a very different dimension from religion. And what I want to understand is how both religion and non-religion give rise to secular political arrangements, and so on and so forth. The idea that it's less contingent on religion is, of course, an etymological trick, because secularity means nothing unless you have a concept of religion, and, of course, it's a Christian term. The emergence of this term shows well how secularity exists on a different dimension to religion, because it's about religious people having an aspect of their lives and their practice, monks moving into the secular world. So secularity is, in that conception, a part of the religious life. And a purely religious life is one that's religion is primary rather than secondary, and that relates quite a lot to how I've conceptualised secularity. Now we have scholars today pointing out that secular politics, religion plays a role in, so that's the other way around. Secularity becomes something that contains possible religious components. Either way, I think it's clear that it's helpful to think about religion and secularity on different dimensions. What then becomes really important is how people's non-religious views and how their atheism, as a very closely related, overlapping concept, how those things are supporting, constraining, giving rise to, undermining secularism and secularity.
Mm. We've touched on it quite a bit there. We were mentioning being in a religious studies department and various problems and benefits that come with that. Why should scholars of religion, whether in religious studies, sociology of religion, or any other discipline that focuses particularly upon religion, why should they be interested in the study of non-religion or secularity, which is really, I guess, not what they're supposed to be studying if they're in religious studies?
Well, I think the real question they should be asking themselves is why are they not interested in this area of study. I'm going to focus on non-religion rather than secularity, because in the end I do think secularity is the least interesting of the two, because in how I define it is it's about, it derives from the secularisation thesis and its interest in the how far we've moved away from religion. So the substantive phenomenon there is religion, and it's useful to think about how religion might be changed in a context that is more secular, i.e. has less religion in it, compared with how religion operates in a context that's surrounded by other religions or a very religious permeated environment. That is interesting, and I think there's lots of research questions, are very important ones, that relate to that. Non-religion, I'm saying, is more interesting, slightly for the fun of it, but because it relates to a body of substantive concrete phenomena. And then we can think about how they fit into certain contexts and so on and so forth. You shouldn't be able to study religion without thinking about non-religion. Unless you want to move entirely away from defining what religion is, in which case, how do you choose what you're studying and talk about what you're studying? Non-religion has turned up in terms of being a control group, the nuns in their statistical analysis, which has provided some useful data actually, but is very problematic because it makes into a very large homogenous group what is very unlikely to be that homogenous a group. So in the UK at the moment, 50% of people are happy to say they're not religious, so we don't know further about them necessarily how religious they are or aren't, but what we do know is they're involved with the non-religious practice of identifying themselves as not religious, so they're fodder for the non-religious studies scholar in that sense. It's very unlikely that 50% of the British population relate to religion, religious others, religious ideas, religious institutions, have their own religious-like philosophies, ultimate question answers to meaning-making, so on, that are very homogenous. Therefore, that body of... this is a problem that Colin Campbell raised in the 1970s, and it remains an issue. That kind of work, which puts that group together in a very crude way, is problematic. On the other hand, the fact that we're talking about such a big population is one reason we should be interested in non-religion studies. Another reason is if we're interested in more practical terms about religious people in secular society, as we call it, how people relate to social cohesion issues and so on, what we need to know is not only how faith groups, as they're normally called, view the world, we need to know how they're viewed by non-faith groups. Not the world, that's definitely
not the same thing.
So people who interact with religious people, if they are not considering themselves to be religious or aren't considered by others to be religious, are involved in some kind of non-religious encounter, by my definition, how are those people imagining what religious people are like? It can't be secular, because secularity is about religion playing a secondary importance. If I'm sitting down with a religious person and I'm engaging with their religiosity, it is by definition not a secondary concern. They're coming to this interaction with goodness knows what assumptions, ideas in mind, some of which may be negative, some of which may be positive. Most distinctions I probably want to make are qualitative. Some people imagine that being religious is about X or Y or Z, and we need to know much more what sort of things they're bringing, the non-faith are bringing to the table in these interactions with faith groups. Those are some of the reasons. There are more.
And you can read both of our work and find out more. Ethan, do you have anything that you're wanting to...
You don't mind my sort of transitioning us to the next one. You sort of mentioned a little bit in the beginning as we were talking about term usage, in sort of these early days of studying sort of atheism and non-religion, how important it is to sort of realize that this is the beginning, this is sort of the early days. And you mentioned that if in 10 years it hasn't really stuck, then we should reconsider. In that aspect, you have founded a research network specifically in studying the non-religious, as you call them. Would you mind sort of just giving us a little bit of sort of a historical background and why you came up with that and how you see that as essential to the study in general?
Well, it's the Non-Religion and Secularity Research Network was a very organically formed network. At the time I started my PhD, I did a pilot study as part of my MPhil, and that was started in 2005. I imagined I was a lone scholar addressing this problem. I mean, I came to the problem by reading the sort of great secularisation debate between Steve Bruce and Rodney Stark, where Rodney Stark plays sort of pulls the carpet out underneath Bruce and other orthodox secularisation theorists' argument by saying we're all really religious, even if we're not practising religion. The demand for religion is universal, it's the supply side that varies. I thought, well, obviously someone will have researched what it's like being non-religious and looked at whether this kind of demand is visible in any sense. And they hadn't. So I became aware of this sort of lacuna in people's thinking. Then, a couple of years later, 2008, someone recommended an article by Stephen Bullivant to me, an excellent article. And my first thought was, oh my, I've been researching this as though everything I say is novel and interesting, and actually, there could be a whole world, and somehow I haven't been aware of it. I got in touch with Stephen, and we then put the feelers out, became less panicked and more excited. And I sent some emails out, and all of a sudden there's 30 people in touch within 2 weeks, I think. And it's one of those things where we start looking at the conditions of why it emerged at the time. I'm a sociologist. I think of things in terms of structural factors that give rise to something. So the idea that I thought I've been the person that discovered this is very should be contrary to my whole way of thinking. And so then there was this group of scholars there who obviously weren't meeting because it would be one panel on atheism or non-religion at a conference on religion. So those kind of that kind of matrix of communication didn't exist. So we started building it. And we had a first meeting at Oxford in 2009, the first conference, not quite knowing how it was going to go. We were absolutely overwhelmed by the response, and that gave rise to the special edition of the Journal of Contemporary Religion that you'd mentioned. And so on. We've just grown and grown from there. The terms non-religion and secularity were, again, pragmatic, as I'd started off using the term irreligion in my work, which I think of as very similar, and I think to a non-religion, and I think it's quite useful. And the reason I didn't do it was, from discussion with another scholar, Abby Day, we were talking about being in the field and the non-recognition of the term irreligion. I also latterly thought it can sound a bit like heretic or sort of a bit antiquated and have a certain set of connotations that I wasn't sure were that helpful. It could sound narrower than it is because it does include, by the OED definition, it includes indifference to religion and hostility to religion. So it is quite wide as it is. I want to say things might be wider, that people might be interacting with religion in much more positive, neither indifferent nor hostile, but nevertheless have a sense of difference from religion. And as part of that shift, I moved towards the term non-religion, which has another problem in that it might sound too inclusive, as I've said earlier, that it could mean everything and anything. Mm-hmm. So I used that term, because that was my thinking at the time, and we used secularity because I do think it's a related field of study, and that the two things, especially in 2008, needed to be theorised a lot more, and they still do. And also because secularity and secularism are terms that are much more important in a North American setting than in the European setting. So we wanted to make sure we were capturing lots of work that we might otherwise not pick up. I did feel strongly that we wouldn't lead with atheism, partly because atheism had a more defined role in popular culture, especially with the rise of new atheists and so on and so forth. We wanted to be very clear that we were thinking beyond that and being more exploratory at that stage. But yes, as when the journal Secularism and Non-Religion, we came up with these same issues of how to set up a new journal and capture the right article submissions, but not put people off that we actually want to be involved and get the right terms in that sense. But I think in the end we debated these terms forever and ever. To me, secularism is a political ideology, for example. In America, it's much more what I mean by non-religion, and there's all sorts of things that you could debate forever. And we'll work themselves out. But in the end, we said, look, we're going to have to change the title of this journal and probably the NSRN as this research comes in. And if we don't, that we will have failed.
Yeah. And as we've discussed previously, that the NSRN is very open to people sort of arguing or debating or, coming to conferences with argumentative viewpoints. So
absolutely. Yeah.
I want to get on to the sort of practicalities of doing this sort of research with religious groups. You've got very defined groups you can go to. You can say, hey, I want to do some research. You can research them. Or you've got very well-defined texts. You can find a text which claims I am a religious text, and you can deal with that. Mm-hmm. With the non-religious, that's much more difficult. You've obviously got some groups, British Humanist Association, National Secular Society, mm-hmm. plenty in America, all over the place, but those aren't going to be representative of the vast majority of people who are non-religious. So maybe if you want, through the lens of your own research, it'd be mm-hmm. good to have a few sort of tangible examples for people to listen to how you might have gone about doing some of this research. If you just tell us a little bit about how you, the sort of methodological issues in researching non-religion.
Yeah, there are a lot of methodological issues for the reasons you said, that it's often a non-institutional phenomenon, and for the reasons of we are still working on what we mean by that term. So, but there are various ways in. My own work was initially interview-based, and I was interested in what I conceived of at the beginning as the secular population, which is what they're mainly called. And I just worked with people who said they were not religious on surveys. And a group we know to include people that have all sorts of theistic beliefs, alternative spirituality practices, and so on and so forth. But again, it required some pragmatism and saying we'll start with something. And what I'm starting with is specifically not a non-religious population, but people who do the non-religious practice of identifying themselves as non-religious. And I think that's an important point. You can be specific about what you're looking at. I mean, you should, as a social scientist. The idea of how to find a non-religious population, that's much more problematic. If you say, as I did, I'm going to find people who identify as non-religious, then we can go from there. Other ways, as my research developed, and it was a very exploratory project in southeast England, mainly Cambridge and London and some places in between, I started noticing a range of practices, visual representations, and so on of non-religion, which I've discussed, and I think give rise to lots of new opportunities for researchers. There's some work already that's really interesting on civil ceremonies, so secular ceremonies, and non-religious ceremonies like humanist ones, although humanism isn't necessarily non-religious, but it is in practice in this case because it often references religion, I should say.
Nice point,
So, there's some excellent work with Matthew Engelke at LSE, as trained as a celebrant, which is the equivalent of a minister, for example, at the helm of marriages and funerals and things that are incredibly important to people. But until there's been this non-religious arena, haven't really made a clear impact on our thinking and our studies. Anything that is religious-like, so what we're saying here is there's a concept of religion that exists, and I'm going to push that further. I'm not saying any of this is intrinsically religious, but if there's anything that's religious-like or discursively religious, we talk about it as being religious, but is in some way we consider to be not religious, that's fodder for non-religious research. And when you start thinking about that, opportunities arise more and more. So there's the civil ceremonies. I'm not sure that people always notice how many non-religious slogans there are in the world around them, partly because potentially in Britain it's quite mainstream. But when you start looking, there's obviously the Atheist Bus campaign, which got a lot of attention. But when you start looking, there's a wealth of non-religious slogans that you encounter. So there's lots of examples, but to give an example that shows how kind of everyday this might be, there's a mainstream toiletries brand or whatever called Soap and Glory. I don't know if this isn't the BBC, so I presume I can mention them by name. And they have a shower gel that says, has sort of all these kind of kitsch slogans all over it. It's kind of very 50s styled. And there'll be slogans like, you know, things about, I don't know, get sexy soft skin type thing. This is the kind of slogan. And on one of the bottles it says, and this is not, I don't know if this is a precise quote, but it's fairly close to it, cleanliness is essential when godliness is improbable. This is on a soap brand, which I found in the house of someone I was interviewing. And they had no idea. You know, this isn't, it's not, the fact that it isn't sticking out and intervening in your world doesn't mean it's not important. And I've talked, and to try and think about this, I've talked a bit about something banal non-religion, as after Billig's idea of banal nationalism, in which he makes a distinction between the waved flag and the sort of dusty old flag in the back of a school classroom that no one notices, a national flag. And he says, nationalism scholars, you're always looking for the waved flag, but what's really important is the dusty old flag in the back of the room, for understanding what the culture is about and the nationalist messages that are really part of our lives. non-religion studies opens all kinds of opportunities for looking for banal non-religion. When you start looking for it, the very fact that it's unnoticed doesn't mean it's there. The fact that it's unnoticed means it's very embedded and perhaps more meaningful in our lives than we even have any sense of.
Mm.
Perhaps not. I mean, that's a research question.
Yeah. I know there's been a lot of research. We've got the new journal that's been started and is entirely open access, by the way, so anyone who's listening can go and read the research for themselves.
And submit research,
mm-hmm. definitely. But is there anything, if you can think of sort of one or two examples of like what non-religion research has brought to the field, interesting finds?
Has contributed.
Yeah.
I think one of the things I've been struck by, although I'm not sure it's that well known yet, is how important non-religion research has been for understanding how secularism works. And lots of we've had this movement towards post-secularity or post-secularism, and we've been thinking about a different understanding of the role religion can play in secular settlements. Some of the earlier ones of these and ongoing discussions really conflate non-religion and secularism. So they think about rationalism shaping how people interact with religious people. Non-religious studies has a potential to unpack what in the initial stages was quite a kind of crude conflation of anti-religion rationalism and radical secularism. One of the major things that it helps do is say that you can be religious and secularist at the same time, because you've untangled those two things. So even that basic conceptual work is quite enabling. But in another vein, it says the non-religion of the person involved is also worth understanding, and different non-religious cultures might give rise to very different secularist arrangements. And that's really important for understanding the different kinds of secularism that are involved in France, UK, Denmark, so on and so forth. In terms of, that's still very much a kind of conceptual work that helps us push knowledge further rather than a kind of great achievement that we have.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest with you, I think that's the stage that we're really at. It's about untangling things that have previously been tangled. A fine way of saying it is, as Charles Taylor did recently, about secularism is it's a Socratic mode of wisdom, understanding what we don't understand, or clarifying on our confusions. And I do think that's probably the greatest achievement to date. In the American case, there's quite a lot of work done on discrimination against atheists, mm-hmm. and I think that's quite important, but also interesting in terms of understanding the atheist cultures and other non-religious cultures that are emerging at the moment, and their very combative versions and their much less combative versions. So I think there's very real social benefits that we're beginning to see emerge.
Mm. The final thing that I seem to always ask at the end of every interview is, where do we see this going? What is the future? Ethan, or something written down?
Yeah, I wrote that exact thing down.
You wrote that exact thing down.
Wonderful. I'm listening to you too much.
but yes, where is the field going? Where would you like it to go? Where do you see it going? And one thing I'm going to make a point of asking, because we put out on Twitter that we were interviewing today and we had a question sent in, so I'm going to highlight that we had a question sent in on Twitter.
That's great.
Which was about, do we see, the whole non-religion being incorporated into, it was religious education in schools and things like that, but is that the kind of the level that things are, do we hope that they're going to get to that level? Do you think that would be a good thing? But more generally, what's the future?
That's great. It's very modern. Yeah, that's excellent. Some non-religious ways of thinking are already incorporated in religious studies in schools. But of course they're hampered by what the rest of us are hampered by, which is a fairly crude understanding of what non-religion means and a focus on very few examples. The same problems that are related to how we involve non-religion in religious studies curricula impact on all sorts of things, including the representation of non-religion in public administration, those kind of consultancies and legislation. So it's really important because in the end, it's very difficult to know. It's difficult to know who a spokesperson is for a religious group. That's very, very problematic. But it's even more problematic for non-religious who aren't part of any kind of institution or don't always have very visible identities. And the British Humanist Association, and I'm most familiar with the British case where my work's located, the British Humanist Association and the National Secular Society are often called upon to fulfil that role. And they represent, well, we don't know how many people's views they represent, but, you know, thousands of people's views. But it's, again, unlikely that they represent the views of these many millions of people. And we need to try and work out really how to represent those views, and part of that is identifying them. So I certainly would see that as a practical application, improving that. In terms of the future of non-religious studies, I don't have a clue where I see it going. I know how I want to develop my own theories of religion and non-religion, and how I think the universal category that might emerge, what I think it might be. But it's a massive field of study, and I think, and there's now so many scholars involved, it would be absurd to have an idea where that's going to go. As I said, all I know is that what I hope is going to happen is what we know now is going to be eclipsed. And that's, you know, that's why I don't want to see the same terms around. I want that dynamism to be there, but it would be contrary to that dynamism to say where I think it's going. There are important questions, but how they're going to be answered, I wouldn't presume to say.
Do you see it as having a sort of reformative agenda for the academic study of religion?
Yeah, I think that the emergence of non-religious studies is incredibly positive for the study of religion. Having this asymmetry in how we think about religion, in that we only think about religion to a great extent, leads to sort of grievances from both sides, so to speak, of the discussion. So one group can feel that they're sort of singled out, but they're also getting lots of attention, and the other group could feel very neglected, but also take the sort of normative view that being non-religious is sort of normal, and that's why you don't need to research it. So there's winners and losers on both sides. But the study of non-religion definitely doesn't reify the concept of religion, which was an issue we were discussing earlier, an important line of thinking, because I think it's possible that the study of non-religion will move us beyond both the concepts of non-religion and religion. I see that as a possibility. But for the time being, it says that the work that's going on in religious studies is very worthwhile, and describes aspects of life, of human life, that isn't covered by any other department at this time, and that's really important. That, you know, secular or no, that all won't disappear, that area of human life and experience.
Wonderful. Well, on that positive note, thank you very much, Lois, and thank you very much, Ethan.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you,
cool.
Well, you've just been listening to Chris and Ethan talking to Lois Lee about the subject of non-religion. And as usual, we'll be featuring a response to that interview this coming Wednesday, this time from Christopher Silver. And, as always, on Friday we'll be publishing our Opportunities Digest, and I hope that you have had a look at and perhaps made use of our PDF summary of it, which we're now producing, intended so that you can email it around to colleagues and departments, or perhaps print out a hard copy to pin up on the notice board in your department. Next week there'll be an interview with myself talking to Gordon Melton on the subject of American millennialism, a very timely topic. You may notice as well the last couple of weeks we've featured a new format, which is conference reports, both of these initial ones by Venetia Robertson, but we do have several other ones coming up in the coming weeks and months. Judging by the number of hits that they've been having, these have proven popular with you too. So we suggest that this offers another way that you can get involved with the Religious Studies Project. If you're going to a conference and you fancy writing us a report, why not drop us a quick line, and we'll be more than likely to have you join the team. You can contact us through our email, editors@religiousstudiesproject.com. If you have a call for papers or anything else, use the email Ops Digest, OPPSDIGEST, at religiousstudiesproject.com to ensure that that goes in. You can also contact us or comment on any of the issues in this podcast or any of the others through our website, religiousstudiesproject.com, through their Facebook page, or our Twitter feed, at ProjectRS. If you use iTunes to listen to the show, please do rate us. We would appreciate that very much. But for now, thanks for listening.